What's up, everybody, to another episode of the JTS Podcast. My name is Marcus Modi, alongside my partners, Patton Cook and Gabe Jones. We are glad for you guys. We're just bringing another episode. It's been a little while. I've got one of our guys had a little great vacation, extended vacation. Not here, nowhere near here. Both me and Patton, actually, that was Gabe. That was out in... What actually, go ahead and tell the listeners, where were you at these past, week and a half, 2 weeks, buddy?
Yes, sir. You know, first I had to go out to Colorado, see my homeboy, Young Tucker, spend a few days there, and then I flew to Honolulu, Hawaii, and boy, was it amazing. Oh, paradise. It really was. It was gorgeous. I mean, you ride along the coast, you see the beautiful ocean waters, you go through the middle, you're riding through a jungle. You're on the interstate, but you look around, you see mountains, you see clouds, you see monkeys. You don't see any monkeys, but it's gorgeous, man. Lush green, beautiful women, everything a man could ever want.
All right. Well, everybody, I just want to let you know, if you go to Hawaii, don't fall for the traps, as Gabe just has mentioned. Go to the nice attractions. Don't fall for the bad stuff. That's all I'm gonna say on that one. Now, Patton, we had a normal. How everything go for you? I was pretty normal. I was just doing the usual.
Me and you, Marcus, I think we were just kind of grinding away at the work while Gabe was in literal heaven. Very jealous of him and his Snapchat stories. I'm already looking at Hawaii tickets, Honolulu tickets, flight tickets, what it'd take to get down there. But happy for Gabe, a working man like Gabe. Bezos kind of funded that one for him, and I'm happy for him. Happy for Gabe to get down there. Got to see the stomping grounds of Mr. Marcus Mariota. I'm sure he went to he's like a cult legend down there, but ready to get things going here. We have got some NBA to talk about.
Oh, yes, sir, because it's a few teams that joined Gabriel Jones. They might not went to Hawaii. They might have visited Cancun. They might have went to Paris. They might have went to Rome because they're out of the playoffs now. We're going to start with the Eastern Conference first because – Hey, the number one seed, Philadelphia 76ers, got it done against the Washington Wizards. That closeout game was even without Ben Simmons, but Joel Embiid, and the Sixers just got it done. Wizards just really didn't have any answers for the Philadelphia's front court, and that was really the game changer for the entire series.
Yeah, the Wizards are very much so top heavy. Russell Westbrook, Bradley Beal, and that's it. That's about it. Rui Hachimura did okay. I think Thomas Bryant, I don't think he played. Did he play? I don't think that he played at all. What's your next best guy? Bertans? Is that what you're leaning on? Bertans to get something done? Absolutely not. They had no chance going into the series. I will say game one, they kind of got cheated. Russell Westbrook, it was a 50-50 call whether or not he was out of bounds, but the ref called him out of bounds. They shouldn't have made that call, in my personal opinion. But other than that, just like, let's see, games 55-pointer, where you just can't waste those. And in their case, it was out of bounds, got called out of bounds, and then they lost, and that was it from there. I mean, they did win that closeout game, and B did get hurt. They hustled their tails off, but it wasn't much hope for the Wizards.
One thing for the Wizards on this one, like Gabe was talking about, when you have Bradley Beal, who kind of the hamstring for him was pretty shot the entire series, injured it right before the regular season, and like a trooper to get into the playoffs, he kind of had to play on one leg, and he was doing that pretty much the entire series. You could just tell that from the beginning. So even though they have the two-man game, if you will, in Russell Westbrook and Bradley Beal at the one and two guard, it was really just Russell Westbrook at full health, and he kind of did what he does best, and that's just average a triple-double. He had a very good series, but other than that, it was just him. Now, for the 76ers, I thought it was vital for them to kind of get this series done and away with as soon as possible, because one thing we will want to talk about, Joel Embiid, he has a small tear in that knee of his, which was one of the kind of scary things coming out of Kansas, was his knee. His knee was pretty much shot coming out, and he's done an okay job with it throughout his NBA career, but he's got another problem with it now. And it's one of those things where it's not a monthly 6 month tear or whatever like that. It's something he can play with, and that's just going to be pain tolerance for him. And it's going to be vital for him to kind of sit down and maybe not go to Cancun, but maybe sit down in a Philadelphia spa massage or something to kind of rest up for a tough playoff grind ahead, because they need him more than anything. Because Ben Simmons right now, he's having a decent postseason, but it is the Joel Embiid show right now, as it rightfully should be, as the season that Joel Embiid had before getting injured about three-fourths of the way through of the season. So Joel Embiid needs to rest up. They needed to get that one won pretty quickly. Did it in five games. I thought the Wizards did good to win one game, to be honest. But 76ers, they survive in advance, and they look to kind of continue on the path of making it to the Eastern Conference Finals. And luckily enough for them, they're going to not kind of have to play one of the two of the Bucks or the Nets, as we'll talk about that series coming up. But decent showing from the 76ers, what you would expect against a team like the Wizards. But at the end of the day, you got to get the job done, and they've done that.
Yeah, it's still going to be really scary just with Joel Embiid with a small tear, because even though he can play through it, anything can happen. And one wrong movement can make things worse. So he's going to have to look into that, hopefully. And then also, well, let's go ahead and talk about the Bucks, but let's hit on the Atlanta. Atlanta defeat the Knicks. Hey, I got to give credit to Gabe. Gabe called this one out on the last pod. He was right. Atlanta went out and got it done because the Knicks had no offense. I did state one thing I did say in the last pod was Julius Randle could shoot efficiently like he did in the regular season. They have a chance. He did not. Just plain and simple. He did not shoot exceptionally well, especially from three. It was terrible. And the Knicks was literally living and dying with Derrick Rose. That was just their offense, just plain and simple. And Atlanta played physical. New York, I think a lot of New York fans are just really happy that New York made the playoffs, let alone just won the series. Hey, because you got to think, at least you went to a game six, but it was game five. But honestly, if you looked at the other matchups, it would have been the same outcome. I don't see any difference. I don't see any difference between the other matchups and this one. So yeah, you did play Atlanta, but at least you didn't get 30-pieced every time against Milwaukee or Brooklyn. If you want to be honest, did they have a shot? Would they have had a shot against Philly? I don't think so either. So it was a great regular season for them. Julius Randle, I think he knows now even more what he needs to do to get better in the postseason, because when you're that main guy, you got to step up in the postseason way more than in the regular season. You got to play twice as better in the postseason than the regular season.
Yeah, I mean, they knew that he was going to his left. He went to his left. They were there on his left. And he didn't have much else. He wasn't knocking down the shots. And New York doesn't have any other offense. Whenever you have to put in a 32-year-old D. Rose on the wrong side of his knee injuries to start so you can score points, then you were in situations bleak. But Atlanta, as far as they go, they run deep. They have Lou Williams on their bench. Lou Will, perennial sixth man of the year candidate, and he doesn't play. He doesn't play minutes because they're fine scoring with Gallinari, Bogdanovich, Trey Young, Clint Capella's catching lobs, John Collins is doing his thing. They have the offensive tenacity. How they'll fare against Philly, we'll see, because Philly got some big guards. And even with Embiid out, Dwight Howard would be able to slide into that spot. I think that he'll be able to compete with Capella. So we'll see how far that they go. But New York didn't have much of a chance. I didn't think so.
Yeah, I was a tad bit surprised on really Trae Young's success in this one, because all the talk coming in was the kind of Thibodeau, kind of the game planning, the defense coming into it. And ultimately, you can game plan as much as you want, but when you've got a guy like Trae Young who is, to say, feeling himself inside Madison Square Garden, I think would be putting it pretty lightly, some of the performances he had in there. And that's one thing I want to talk on is coming in Trae Young. I mean, he was always a fun player to watch in the NBA, especially out of college, kind of all the hype about Steph Curry. But I thought we saw a little something different in this postseason, kind of a villain role that he really relished in New York, kind of had the infamous game one and two where getting drinks thrown on him, allegedly got spit on. We saw on video by one of the New York Knicks fans. And he just took that in stride. And for a young player like that, I think we've seen a lot of players kind of cripple under the New York spotlight, even though you're not in New York and you're not playing there week in, week out. But when the media is there, the fans were there, the atmosphere was there for the first time in Madison Square Garden for well over a decade. You hadn't seen it like that, even though it wasn't full capacity. It says a lot about Trae Young. It says a lot about the mindset. And it says a lot about the future of the Atlanta Hawks. And that's one thing I'm looking forward to is because the NBA needs new stars. The stars we got right now are in their mid to late 30s, and you just don't know how much longer you're going to have. And Trae Young is one of those guys that's going to pick up that torch and continue on chugging along. So fantastic series for the Knicks. They're a year ahead of schedule. They didn't really expect us coming into it. They learned some things. They learned they really can't play the kind of defensive battle that they would in the regular season and kind of go out in the transition because those transition points just aren't normally there in the playoffs. It's a lot slower game, and they got some things to work on and maybe some pieces to look at in the moving forward. So another good series, had a lot of storylines for really a 3-4 matchup that you wouldn't expect.
I got something I want to talk about with the fans. The fans, I just want to say, spitting on a man during these COVID times is really irrational, I will say. I'm not going to say, well, your mama raised you better. Let me just say that. Because you know if you spit on somebody, you know your parents would have slapped you right in your mouth. That's the ultimate disrespect. That's really the ultimate disrespect. I don't understand. Now, fans just getting back into the stadiums. We're still in a pandemic. It doesn't matter if you're vaccinated or not. Spitting on another man who's not even paying attention to you at that. You're in a stadium where it's other. What, six, was it 3,000 people in the stands at least? And you spit on them because your close range is, it's crazy. I don't, it's mind blowing. Because also it happened, a fan incident with the Philly series, a dude tried to run on the court. Like, now we all know good and well what's going to happen as soon as you step foot. Is jail time worth it? That's the next question for you. Is the alcohol that's in your blood system, was it enough alcohol in your system for jail time? That's another question for you, because it's dumb, it's stupid. I don't. Yes, now I'm not saying that you should just sit there like it's a sad event, like you're at a funeral, just supposed to sit there, not even clap, not even cheer for your home team. Yeah, you do that. But you also got to show the players they're not robots and not human, and they are human beings. That's the thing I want to say. They're human beings. Because if Trae Young would have turned around and said, and would have went like Malice in the Palace with Ron Artest and Steven Jackson and all of them, everybody would have been looking scared because that guy who looks scrawny was really six. Was he 6 foot 6'1"?
He like 6'2". Yeah. Right.
Well, 6'2", 185, a muscle with one swing at you could knock you out, just plain and simple. Then you're going to want to press charges. But would feel some type of way if you spit on Trae Young and he pressed charges. Come on now. Come on now, fans. You got to do better.
Yeah, no, it was gross. You shouldn't spit on anybody. I will address the Russell Westbrook thing. I don't know if y'all have ever been in a food fight, but I would be interested in getting in one. And popcorn wouldn't be that bad. I'm not saying that you should pour popcorn on the guy, but I'm just saying, like, it is not that bad. And with Kyrie Irving, I think that dude that threw the water bottle at Kyrie Irving, he got charged with assault with a deadly weapon. Bro, it's a water bottle. I'm not saying that you should throw it at him. I'm saying that you should probably get consequences, but assault with a deadly weapon for throwing a water bottle. Come on now. Come on.
Hey, Patton, before you start, all I want to say is he threw it from like at least 8 to 10 rows up.
Man, sniper.
That's a lot. That's a lot of strength to be throwing a water bottle, no matter how big the water bottle is. All right, Gabe. Matter of fact, next time we are together, I'll throw a water bottle from across the room, and it hits you in the face. And if it hits you in the face, tell me how it feels. Now, just think, and then we're gonna picture it from 10 rows up. Matter of fact,
it gotta be one of these minis. He threw a mini. He threw a mini and was empty.
It was not empty. It wasn't empty. It wasn't empty. We gonna say, there's tape for it. There's tape. That's the one thing about the NBA. They don't have cameras everywhere, so there's tape for it.
Everywhere. I will say this: if one of the two situations, the deadly weapon, I think spitting on someone in COVID times is more deadly than throwing a water bottle. I'll say that. I'm kind of with Gabe on this one. It's clear what they're trying to do with the assault with the deadly weapon. They're trying to make an example out of the guy. And this is the first time fans have really been back in a capacity like it is right now in well over a year. And fans are a little stupid right now. And it just is what it is. It shouldn't be like that. And I think there should be a precedent made that if this happens again, we might have to make it bad for everyone. I think there's a case to be made for some of these stands, no more fans. If kind of these continue to happen in the playoffs, there's got to be some discussions because players ultimately in the NBA have got a little more power than any other league in sports. And they'll say, we're not going out there until something really gets truly done. And I think that's a discussion that needs to be made that I think unfortunately has to be made at this point.
Hey, Gabe,
you can't guard against crazy, bro. He's just crazy. I mean, the dude that spit on Trae Young, like I said, irreparable. He should have been charged with assault with a deadly weapon or something. Like, he should go to jail. But, I mean, like I said, maybe ban him. The dude that threw the water bottle, ban him. The dude that threw the popcorn, ban him. But they shouldn't get charged with assault with a deadly weapon. Come on, man. Come on.
Hey, all I'm going to say is back in my high school, there was a couple times there were food fights. I don't think anybody was very pleased getting hit with food. I can't name one person.
An apple that hurts, but like a grape, that'd be fun. I don't know. I'm into it.
Hey, because I done seen mac and cheese get thrown in the air, chocolate milk. I done seen a lot of things. Hey, I know the people back from Memphis that I went to high school with, they know we had a food fight almost every year. So, hey, corn, mac and cheese, chocolate milk, with pizza. Hey,
I'm with it. I just can't be wearing my nice clothes. Otherwise, I'm with it, bro. I need this.
No. Let's go ahead and move on because Brooklyn advanced against the injury-driven Boston Celtics. I don't know. It wasn't really just much for me in this series just because we all knew that Brooklyn was the very overpowered team, and even Brad Stevens knew it himself coming into this series. So, hey, Brooklyn just got it done.
Yeah, I think that this was one of the most entertaining series of the first round, if not the most entertaining, even though it went 4-1, because JT was putting on a show every single game. Nobody could stop him. They all got all that they could get. Kyrie, Harden, Kevin Durant, Bruce Brown, all of them, bucket, bucket, bucket. JT was doing his thing. And then, of course, on the other side, we got to see virtuosos from Harden. We got to see virtuosos from Kevin Durant. He shot like dang near, I think 55-45. Harden shot like 55-45, averaging 26 and 10. Kyrie, he had like 24 shooting 50-40-90. So It's all that we expected. I mean, it was a great series just to watch the game of basketball. It was enjoyable to watch.
Yeah, it's pretty rare to have a Brooklyn Nets game that isn't enjoyable just because I enjoy the – you get the ball, it's your turn to score. I don't know. I just really do enjoy that from this team. Normally I wouldn't. That Miami Heat team with Chris Bosh, LeBron, and Dwayne Wade, it just seemed a bit kind of – out of sync at some point of games whenever you'd watch it. But right now in this Brooklyn series, they just know when it's their turn. And I'd like to give a shout out to James Harden, because in his times in Houston, his game was just not very enjoyable to watch. I don't know what it is in Brooklyn. I don't know if it's the black Nets jersey that he has on. It's just an appetizing kind of game to look at right now. He's an enjoyable player. He's playing basketball the right way. He's deferring when it needs to be done. And that's something he wasn't really doing in Houston. He wasn't really willing to do that to Chris Paul. Whether he's right to do that or not will be a discussion for a later date that I'm sure we can talk about. But for James Harden, I've been really impressed with his game right now. And he is well on his way to be an NBA champion, because right now this Brooklyn Nets team and the offense, I mean, they're putting up 140 every night, and the defense is doing just enough, even with Jason Tatum going absolute berserk. No one else on that Boston team was able to do so. Aaron Naismith never really could get it going. Luke Kornet, Vanderbilt center coming off the bench, couldn't do it either. Joking, of course, didn't get a ton of minutes in that series. But for this Boston team, there's going to be a lot of soul searching, a lot of changes coming up. Of course, it's no longer going to be Brad Stevens on the bench anymore. He is going in the front office mode with Danny Ainge stepping down. He seemed to be about giving up on the team, as he's put this team in a mess. He's got this Kemba Walker contract going absolute through the roof. Are they going to be able to get rid of him? I am not sure. So this is going to be a new look Boston Celtics team. But one thing you can say, they've got their star. Jason Tatum is it. They don't have to worry about that. They just need to get a supporting cast that really fits around them. Whether they can do that, that is easier said than done. There's been many a team trying to do that, and a team we'll talk about later in the Trailblazers. It's tough to build a supporting cast around, and Boston is starting to find that out more and more as the days go on.
Yeah, Jason Tatum, he was trying to – hey, he's getting that superstar treatment now. You can score 40, 45. Hey, sometimes your team – if they're not the better team, sometimes your team can get that L. And, hey, sometimes you will get a little bit of criticism because your team, you being the best player, can't get it, not getting it done. They're looking at you. They're going to put a lot of pressure on your shoulders. Hey, just got to move forward. Hopefully Jaylen Brown, Robert Williams, and those other role guys can help him out, because it was tough for Tatum. He was trying his best. It's just that with Brooklyn's big three scoring 100 points with ease, it's tough for a one-man team, just plain and simple. Now, moving on to the sweep, the only sweep of the playoff, this first round, Milwaukee Bucks. And now, Gabriel Jones, you was wrong on this one.
Hot wrong. Way off Pete.
As Milwaukee just sweeps the Eastern Conference champs, the former Eastern Conference champs, Miami Heat, didn't see this one coming at all, fellas. That's all I'm going to say.
I will say this. I should have read the tea leaves, should have been looking in the signs. You know, Miami has been dealing with injury all year. They haven't been in sync all year at all, and they lost some pieces. Jake Crowder was a big piece to this Miami team. And coming into this series, I just did not expect Jimmy Butler to play so terribly. I think he averaged like 12 points on 29% shooting. That is god awful. But you know what I forgot? Jrue Holiday on the other side. A few years ago, we saw the Pelicans go against the Trailblazers, and Dame had probably his worst series ever. Now, granted, they were running two and three guys at him, but the main defender was Jrue Holiday. And we see what he has done to Jimmy Butler, just straight up D-locks. He's known as the best perimeter defender. And that series, He definitely proved it. Now, I'm very interested to see what happens in the next series because he's going to have some elite guards to guard. But Chris Middleton, Drew Holiday, both great defenders. Obviously, Drew, as good as he is on offense, way better on defense. And they took care of business, man. Bucks just took care of business.
Yeah, game one in this series, it came down to the wire. And I think Miami, I think they're going to be kicking themselves because if they win that game, I think the series is a whole lot different. I think kind of doubt kind of goes into the minds of the Milwaukee Bucks. But when you win game one and you kind of eliminate any of the fear that you had from last season in the bubble where Milwaukee was just kind of dumbfounded. They didn't know what to do. All confidence was gone. Giannis didn't know what to do. He was getting triple, quadruple teamed, and any time he tried to pass out of it, Jimmy Butler's long fingers always got a finger to it and ended up stealing away. But when you win game one, it kind of just swung everything, and no game was really close after that. And a lot of that has to do with this Miami Heat team. Just no one really stepped up in the series. Tyler Hero in the bubble last year kind of had the coming out party. Well, he's had a coming down party this entire season. It's been an absolute nightmare for him. And kind of the talk all season was that Miami was not willing to give up Tyler Hero in a trade to get James Harden. Well, I think they will be rueing that decision. And it's just kind of you do what you do, and that's exactly what Miami did. Pat Riley trusted in the kid, and they are going to be kind of ruining that decision, I think, for a decade to come with how Brooklyn is looking right now. But that's just how things go for Jimmy Butler. He's taken a step back in the star meter. What he did in the bubble last season, I think it raised his legacy a whole lot. I think it's come back down. He is not the superstar that can carry a team like many thought he could last season. That's just things in teams come and go. And one thing I will say, we see this in sports a lot. When a team makes it to the finals kind of unexpectedly, people think, well, they're going to be able to go back. This team can kind of rebuild, recoup. I think of the Tennessee Titans making it the AFC Championship game, the Atlanta Falcons in the NFL, and then our Nashville Predators, they did it in the NHL, and they really haven't come back since.
Gabe, did he just say what I thought he said?
No, he said they made it and they didn't get any more visits.
Wow, I thought that was I'm surprised they came from Pat and Cook. Are you sure that's from this is the Pat and Cook that we know? Is this a genetic clone, ladies and gentlemen? No, I don't.
I'll just say I just don't see the Titans getting back there unless a specific player gets to us, which we'll talk about a little later. But there's a lot to be said when you get to the big dance. You got to make the most of it, and those teams didn't, and it doesn't look like they're going to get there anytime soon. And the Miami Heat looked like a long list of teams that have made it to the big dance that have not shown up, and they're not going back probably.
Yeah. Jimmy Butler and Bam, they disappointed me a lot. I'll say that they would play a lot better. The physicality for the Bucks was overwhelming them. And that's something that they put their pride and joy in, which was really strange. I think also game one, when the Bucks shot so terrible from three and you're making everything and still lose that game. I think it was a stat line saying that it was 72-1 when teams outscore their opponents by 45 points from three. Jeez. Yeah, and the one loss is Miami. So I think that was a deal breaker there because they really didn't shoot well from three ever since that game one. It is. It's tough. Got to regroup now in Miami. Tell Tyler Hero get out them clubs. That's all I'm going to say. Now, moving on, let's go to the West.
Wait. Before we go back, I saw something that said if Tyler Hero had a coming out party this year, he was scared straight.
Wow. You know what? You know, we're gonna send it to a break on that note. Let's just go ahead and send it to a break. And when we come back, we'll hit on the West aspect of it. And we got some more coming for you really shortly. We'll be right back with more of the JTS podcast. Welcome back, guys. We're gonna hit on the Western Conference of the NBA playoffs. And we're going to hit on this 1-8 seed as Utah with a gentleman sweep against the Memphis Grizzlies. One thing I will say, it could have possibly been a sweep if Donovan Mitchell played game one. Donovan Mitchell was not happy with the Utah staff. They held him out of game one. Memphis ended up taking game one. Ja Morant, though, played phenomenal, averaging 30 for the series, just under 8 assists, shooting, I believe, was a little bit under 44, around 44% from the field. Memphis has a bright future. I think it was just Utah was just a better overall team. And, hey, Donovan Mitchell, he's got a point to prove. Shaq called him out early on in the season, and Utah, they, like what Lil Baby said, they got something to prove.
Indeed. No, I think Utah Jazz might be going to the maybe even the finals, man. I think that they probably top to bottom are the best team left in the West. Yeah. After, you know, one of these teams exits, we'll get to it. But in the series against the Grizzlies, Donovan Mitchell didn't play the first game, but game one, Bojan Bogdanovic, that dude went off in the third quarter. I think he scored like 12, in between 12 and 18 straight points. So he was kind of keeping them in the game. Dylan Brooks did his thing, showed that he can actually be maybe even a second guy for Memphis. But Memphis does have a bright future with their young core. Jaren Jackson, Ja Morant, Dylan Brooks, Xavier Tillman, right? And my boy Desmond Bain got a chopper, boy. He got a chopper. So Memphis has a nice young core. I would love to see how they develop. Hopefully they keep that core of guys together towards their future. Valanciunas, he's really good. I'm not sure how far they'll keep him in towards the future, but like I said, those four or five guys, they should hold on to those dudes. We'll see what type of team they can make.
You forgot
about Grayson Allen, my bad.
Grayson Allen. No, not even Grayson Allen. Mr. Do It All. D'Anthony Melton.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. A fire young core, man. We'll see if they can keep them together, though. It'd be tough.
Yeah, much to the chagrin of LeBron James, I think Utah is the best team in the West right now. And when they've got a guy like Mike Conley, who is veteran-ridden, when you've got some of these young guys and guys who haven't had the most playoff success there is, I think that's a big thing for this team. And Mike, he's playing some of his best basketball of his career right now because he is not the guy. I think the majority of time in Memphis, even when they had Zach Randolph going, I think Mike Conley was the guy. And for this Utah team, they don't need him to be that at all. They've got Donovan Mitchell to be their superstar on that team. And just every guy on the team, they're playing their role. They're not being more than what they have to be. And I think that's big for playoff basketball, is when you don't have a bench player trying to be a superstar, and everyone knows their role. It's a very good and well-coached team over there in Utah. And when you get a quick order of a young, hot team like Memphis, because coming in, this was a team not a lot of teams want to play, just because how young and hungry and how aggressive they are on all forms of the basketball court. They dealt with them pretty quickly. For Ja Morant, more of the same for him. He's just kind of doing more and more. Guys, we saw him live for his last season at Murray State, and I think we knew how good he was, but right now you just never know when you're doing it against OBC competition. Can you do it against some of the best in the world? Well, he is sure as heck doing it in front of the best of the world. And give credit to Ja Morant, because he's kind of shaping his game as it needs to be. One thing I will say, Jaren Jackson didn't have another full healthy season. They have got to get that under control. They can't keep having him playing half the season going into the playoffs and trying to make it work. They need a full season out of him, a full season's work. And if you can't, you might have to look at letting him go, because you just can't have a guy who's really going to be their number two guy when healthy. You can't have him missing half the season when healthy. So this Memphis team has got some things to work on. For Utah, I don't think they have a whole lot to work on. I think this is a dead set team right now, ready to win now if they play to their full potential, and it's all about matchups at this point. And if they get that right matchup, I think watch out, because it's a team that plays defense and they can score the ball as good as anyone with Donovan Mitchell leading the pack.
One thing, their only free agent for the Grizzlies is going to be Justice Winslow in this upcoming year, so they can keep everybody if they want to. I agree with you. Jan Jackson has to stay healthy. I think this time off,
he got to stop fouling.
I was going to bring that up as well. Hey, not only just him, Dylan Brooks as well. Dylan Brooks.
At least Brooks put hard on D, man. Golly.
But Dylan Brooks led the league in back-to-back years in fouls and fouled out the most. They gotta discipline themselves defensively even more. You love the aggression by those guys, but knowing when to be fully aggressive and when to take a step back will boost the Grizzlies. It can boost the Grizzlies into a major threat in the West in the near future. That's really – and then because you got the shooters, you got tenacious defenders. It's just them understanding when is the moment for them. And for Utah, hey, when you got the sixth man of the year coming off the bench, Jordan Clarkson, and he can give you 20 points and just be chilling, hey, that's a problem. And all the shooting that's around Utah right now, Rudy Gobert, who might win Defensive Player of the Year. Just think, if you got a Defensive Player of the Year and a sixth man of the year on the same team, it's on the court at the same time, is really a problem matchups-wise. It's tough. Utah, they can be a really scary team with Donovan Mitchell leading them the way. What you got, Pat?
One final thing. You mentioned Jordan Clarkson. I saw him in Cleveland for a couple of years whenever we made that trade with the LA Lakers. And I think for a guy, I think he's done as good as anyone adjusting his game to what he really wanted to be was a starter. But when he saw he can make a whole lot of money coming off the bench and he can win a whole lot of awards, he won sixth man of the year this year. And for a guy like that, he runs the second unit. And I think this has revitalized his career, because in LA, he was kind of just, you just didn't know what kind of a player he was. Is he going to take 30 shots a game? Is he going to take two? Well, he's found his role right now coming off the bench, started to do that in Cleveland, but he has perfected that role. And I think that's one thing you can say about a guy like Jordan Clarkson. He could have just put his head down and say, I'm a starter. I want to go to Sacramento and start every game. And they would have allowed that, but he wants to be on a winning basketball team. He says, I'll do whatever it takes. And it's coming off the bench. Derrick Rose, another guy, is doing it like that right now. And it's doing a whole lot for his career. So I give credit to guys like that who kind of move their career, move their play style when it means the best for the team and the best for their careers. And it is benefiting them greatly, to say the least.
I think with Jordan Clarkson, he also realized, as a sixth man, he can take 12 to 15 shots still. Yeah. Doesn't matter if you're a starter or not. Because when Jordan Clarkson gets hot, they're looking for him. They're going to look for him. They're going to be like, hey, take that shot. Knock it down. Now, moving forward, let's go ahead and hit on this one, because Mr. Patton got something to say about a certain somebody, because the Phoenix Suns, yes, sir, Barry Gresham, DeMichael Cole, they are living it up right now, because the number two seed defeated the defending champ LA Lakers in six. Devin Booker in the closeout game with 47 points, 15 to 22 from the field. Gabe, he was. He was saying barbecue chicken alert to everybody.
That man, fingers was greasy.
He started out the game six for three. Man, it was a coming out party. And then you got guys like Cam Payne coming out, another guy from Murray State coming out saying, hey, just being a hustler, plain and simple, got dogs with the Suns. And your boy Jay Crowder, he didn't shoot well those first four games. In the last two games, thought he was might have been Klay Thompson on the wings knocking down threes. Hey, the Lakers, it's tough. It's weird, because they both teams that was in the finals last year with the shortest offseason get bounced in the first round. Both teams, injuries to their main guys, injuries to key players. Lakers also had new guys come in. They didn't bring the exact same roster. And some of those guys on the new roster didn't play so well or actually didn't even get any minutes. So Lakers just got a lot to work on. And I'm gonna let Patton take the floor because go ahead and first off, let me ask you, is this about AD or is this about LeBron? Who is this about, sir?
This is exclusively about LeBron. I'll let Gabe and yourself talk about the actual series that went on. More of what I'm going to talk about, it's just kind of an overview of a player that I enjoy best. And anyone who's kind of tuned in to this podcast over the years, thinking back, my goodness, we didn't have gray hairs on our head, guys, when we back started doing this. But joking, of course. But I'm the resident LeBron defender. I'm always the guy who's going to kind of step in, take the stray bullets, even when LeBron wouldn't take the bullets for me. Whenever I traveled down to Indianapolis to see LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, and Kevin Love play, and none of them played. So, but I was always the one who was going to kind of take those bullets for him. I'm no longer doing so. I don't know this LeBron James anymore. What I'm specifically talking about, I'm talking about the press conference. I'm thinking now it's time to take on the Toon Squad. Who the hell is this guy? Ever since he's moved down to LA, he's cared more about the movies than the NBA. And I truly do believe that from the bottom of my heart. When you look at some of the press conferences, the effort, leaving games 5 minutes before it's happened, he's done that in every loss that had happened in this series. That is inexcusable for me, for a guy like LeBron James, the face of the league, the leader of that LA Lakers team. What does it say for some of these young guys, for the young Antetokounmpo brother on there, some of the young guys, Dennis Schroeder, who's having an absolute nightmare shooting the basketball, was looking like Kyle Kuzma when Kyle Kuzma was doing the exact same thing. It just doesn't set a good example for those young guys, because LeBron is the leader of this Lakers team. And when you leave the bench 5 minutes before the game happens, you don't congratulate a team who whooped your ass for four games straight. I mean, I just don't get what it says to me. So for LeBron James right now, I would ask him, are you more interested in the NBA right now, or are you more interested in making your billions in LA on the movie sets, making Space Jam, which I refuse to see. I don't know about you guys. I'm not seeing this movie at all. So,
I don't even know who he's talking about.
On this LeBron front, I don't know who he is anymore ever since moving down to LA. So from here on out, I've sent this in a GM of my friends. I will no longer be defending LeBron James until he comes back for the Cleveland return part three. So I've given up on defending LeBron because it is clear he has no interest in this anymore. He cares more about the movies than the basketball. I am going to mute my mic and listen.
Hey, is this I don't know who this man is. Is this Rob Parker or Patton Cook coming? this is mind blowing coming from Sir Patton.
My heart is broken. My heart is broken. It's like watching a relationship just crumble. Like, wow.
Wow. I'm shocked by this. Man, this was a three-piece.
That's a parent saying, I'm not mad, I'm disappointed, bro. Like, that just... Man, hey, I am... Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you're right. He did not play great, and he did give up on his team. He just straight up gave up on his team at the end of the game. This man was walking back on defense, getting attitudes, leaving the game. It was disgusting. I think for this series, he averaged, 21 points for the series. I think in that last game, it boosted him up to like 23, maybe. Enough. No, that's not good enough. You are LeBron James. Or is this the end of his reign?
Yeah.
I think that anything short of him going back and being the best player on his team and winning the finals, we have seen the last year of LeBron being the king, because there are too many other guys, Luka Doncic playing out of his mind, Kawhi Leonard, Kevin Durant. There are too many other players that are playing absolutely fantastic for him to be able to just load, like he was probably the worst defender on the Lakers like the entire year. He doesn't play defense anymore. And if he's not able to put up his 25-7-7, his 20-20 whatever, 8-8, he's not able to do that, shooting over 50%, then he can't be the king. And if you can't go on those deep runs, you can't be the king anymore, man.
It was a crazy stat that I heard. LeBron, like it was like 40% of his shots was coming from three.
Yeah.
In this series. And it was just like LeBron is not LeBron James, or I understand if it was Stephen Curry, Damian Lillard. No, this is LeBron going against the Suns, the Phoenix Suns at that. One thing I do want to say, I think this front office really destroyed a lot for this team this year, because getting Andre Drummond and him not playing at all in a closeout game doesn't make any sense at all. Montrezl Harrell, who was sixth man of the year, hardly getting any minutes at all, doesn't make sense at all. Anthony Davis, LeBron, AD, and Drummond only played three games together before the playoffs started. So that's not a great setup at all. Yes, those guys was injured. LeBron saying he wasn't, 85%? That's red flags. Because that was that's when he came back. He's going on a podcast and whatnot saying he's only 85%. That's not a positive sign. Anthony Davis, it seemed like every other game, something's wrong with him. He can't stay healthy. Dennis Schroeder is talking cash money to the Suns in game six, like they wasn't down 25. And they do a 10-point run, and he's talking cash money. They can't even get to single digits. That's why Devin Booker was saying what to him. Because, yeah, you're talking all this noise, all this cap, and you can't even get to single digits. Just downright embarrassing. Kyle Kuzma, a good friend of ours, Gabe Brian Williams, said he would trade Kyle Kuzma for a large McDonald's Sprite.
That's about all he's worth. $1 on the basketball court. Yeah.
A large McDonald's Sprite. That's how bad Kyle Kuzma was playing. It's just, it wasn't pretty. It got a lot of question marks. I think another thing was losing Dwight Howard, losing JaVale McGee. That played a role in it. It's because the spacing was god awful. And Phoenix did a wall around them, honestly. It was just a wall all around LeBron, and LeBron had to settle a lot. That's why he wouldn't get to the basket until it was too late. They're already down 15 and he wanted to get layups. Go ahead, Patty.
Yeah, two things. One, on the LeBron front, it reminded me a lot of the Miami Heat and San Antonio Spurs, where it was just kind of a great wall and not allowing him to get to the basket and kind of just daring him to shoot jump shots. And for the first time in a couple of years, LeBron didn't look comfortable shooting the jump shots at all in this series. And on the kind of big men front for the LA Lakers, I'll say this. I tried to warn Laker fans about Andre Drummond. I saw it for about 4 or 5 months in Cleveland. I saw the absolute abomination of what Andre Drummond is as a basketball player. And I saw some things I can't repeat on this podcast of what some Lakers fans would do to Andre Drummond. And I won't say I condone or understand the tweets, but I will not, I won't disagree. I'll just leave it at that. What I saw from Andre Drummond, I did not like at all. And on the Marc Gasol front, that experiment was an absolute disaster. I thought JaVale McGee earned a right to stay on that LA Lakers team. And what I saw from him in Cleveland and then ultimately moving on, I think down in Denver is what JaVale is right now. He's doing another solid job down there for a role what he is. But for Marc Gasol, he looks old. He looks slow. He doesn't shoot the ball well enough to stay out there on the offensive front. That's just another disastrous move by that LA Lakers front office. And they get a lot of praise when they win, but I think the moves they made this season has been an absolute train wreck of an offseason for them. And right now, bounced in the first round, not a good not a good draft pick really to look for either. A lot of question marks because the West is going to come and pass them by when you've got teams like Denver and Utah Jazz. They're young. They're only going to get better. And the Lakers are getting old and hurt quick.
I will say this. I think that the reason why they lost to the Suns, 60% injury. I think that LeBron and AD, if they were maximum health, I think that they would have been able to beat the Suns team. That obviously the other 40% is how the Lakers team would play. We knew the entire year that they could not guard guards, and Devin Booker tore them up. Cameron Payne tore them up. But I think if AD was fully healthy, just like they showed game, I guess it was the second game and maybe the third game where the was it game four, whenever they went off, did whatever they did. AD went on a tear for a couple of games. But then on the other side, they were just leaving. Like DeAndre Ayton, he averaged like 15 points and he shot 80% from the field. Like all of his shots were wide open layups, wide open dunks, wide open lobs, basically.
I just want to say the Suns won what they hurt Chris Paul for majority of this series.
Yeah.
This is not a prime Chris Paul. This is not a hooping Chris Paul. You got done in by young guys, plain and simple. Young guys that did not have playoff experience. And you guys are veterans. Some of those guys won championships. Some of those guys was in conference finals, playoffs, multiple years. Even if your two best guys were hurt, you guys should have still had the be able to set the tone and execute well, even if Anthony Davis wasn't playing, even if LeBron James wasn't 100%. I can't give him a pass on that. I'm sorry. With guys that's been in the league for 8-plus years and who has been in those critical situations, you just got to go and get it done, plain and simple, and the Lakers didn't.
Everyone's expendable except for LeBron and AD. And maybe Caruso. Caruso didn't play terrible, but everybody else, they can go.
I'll say this. For the Lakers, I've said this for the Cavs. That last season that LeBron had for Cleveland, and when it came apparent that he was not going to re-sign and he wasn't going to go anywhere else, what's the harm in looking what you can get for LeBron James? I know LeBron's never going to get traded because there's probably a secret clause in his contract that he is not allowed to be traded. He might have a no trade clause.
He has a no trade clause. But don't get it twisted. He has a no trade clause.
But in a perfect world for the Lakers, what does LeBron trying 50% do for you? I wouldn't be against it if I'm the LA Lakers to try and have this be Anthony Davis's team. And maybe that's a disaster waiting to happen because that's another discussion we got to have. There's another season where Anthony Davis has been injury prone, and we saw this in New Orleans, and we're seeing it now in LA, where he can't stay on the court long enough to help his team out a lot. We talked about Jarrett Jackson and kind of his young career being injured.
We're talking about the Lakers.
Anthony Davis.
We're talking about the Lakers too much. They're out of the playoffs, so you let the Lakers fans go on Twitter and ramble about all that. We're going to move forward. Because we don't want to talk about LeBron James and Anthony Davis anymore because those guys lost. And I know a lot of fans are upset. So holla at you. We going to watch some quality basketball because another team that advanced is the Denver Nuggets with MVP Jokic going out and getting it done against Gabe's team, the Portland Trail Blazers, who were a fully healthy team.
Gabe, indeed.
Now Patton had his turn. Now yes. It's your turn, buddy. What happened and what went wrong?
Nothing went wrong. Everything that was supposed to happen in this series, other than us winning the 55-point game that Damian Lillard had, went exactly how it was supposed to happen. We can't defend anything. We can't play defense. We just can't do it. We can score a lot of points. Denver, if they have – all right, so if you look at Jokic, this year he averaged, like 8 assists? This series, I think that he averaged 3 or 4 assists for the series. Why? Because they were just like, hey, you're great at passing the ball. We'll put the ball in somebody else's hands because you don't have Jamal – since you don't have Jamal Murray right now, put the ball in your hands, you score the ball. Enes Kanter, can't do anything. They had Nurkic on him. Nurkic would do okay, but he would get Nurkic into foul trouble immediately. He fouled out of the game, I believe, on two games he fouled out, and other games he had like five fouls at the end of the game. So once you put in Enes Kanter on him, matter of fact, in the last game, we just didn't bother putting Enes Kanter in. We just let Robert Covington guard him because Enes Kanter can't do anything with him. It's an automatic bucket every single time. So the fact that we cannot guard them and they are able to score points, they won the series. And I don't think that it's – Terry Stotts ended up getting fired. He's been there for a long time. I don't think that this is really his fault. It's kind of – whoever our GM is, I need to learn this dude's name because it's kind of his fault. But at the same time, is it really his fault? Because who wants to go to Portland? Nobody wants to go play in Portland. Nobody. So, I mean, it just is what it is. Dame, I love you, dude. I love you, dude. I don't have ties to Portland, really. I root for Portland because I wanted Kevin Durant to go there in 2016. But I don't think that he'll be able to get it done in Portland because they just can't put the guys around him. CJ is good, really good. But what would you trade for him? Not much.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye, CJ.
You can trade him, but what would you get for him? Like, what would you get for him?
Because you got to realize CJ McCollum doesn't even have an all-star appearance. Not one.
Yeah, I know. But he cold. He's super-duper good.
Hey, send him to the East. I bet you he'll get an all-star appearance then. It's just he's in the West.
He would.
You were correct. They just didn't have any defense being played. When the backcourt doesn't play defense all together, that's a problem. And then let alone your front court isn't even exceptionally big or can defend. Terry Stotts getting fired doesn't really just help them out. They got to make moves, just plain and simple. Yeah, Terry Stotts was one of the best coaches in the program for the organization, but he also had the second worst playoff record in the organization's history as well. He just couldn't get it done in the playoffs. I think Dame's loyalty is crazy because he wants to stay in Portland. Because all Portland has done for him, all the memories that he's had. Would I be shocked if he pulled a LaMarcus Aldridge? No. Because Portland doesn't do the best job doing what's best for their best players. And that's really a key right there because he's only been to one conference finals. That's it. It's over a decade.
Listen, Nicholas Batum had one of the worst contracts in the league. He got signed for, I think, $80 million over 4 years or something like that. This was back in, like, 2013. You want to know who gave him that contract? The Portland Trail Blazers. Why did we give him that contract? Because they couldn't get anybody else. So that's just the fact of life. I don't think Portland, the only way that they'll win through the draft. And those were their keys, Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. That's who they had, and that's about all you can get, really. Like, that's just what it is.
Yeah, and for me on this front, I think they just need to get rid of CJ. I don't know. I don't really care how they do it. But when you're talking about defending, when you've got two small guards at the position, that's where you get in trouble defensively. You need a defensive two guard at that point because Damian Lillard, for what he is offensively, he isn't the best defender. And they really attack those two guards when you look at it. So CJ and Damian Lillard, my Cavaliers are trying to do this kind of two small guard front, trying to pony it off of the Trailblazers. Well, kind of look how that's working for them right now. It just rarely works when you've got two small guards in the NBA. You need one of those two guards to be able to defend the guard position at an elite level, and neither one of those guys really do that. So if I'm looking at Portland right now, whether that's through the draft, whether that's through the trade, I've got to get an elite two guard at the defensive position. It doesn't have to be offense because Damian Lillard, he scores for two guys. Really, I did see a report from Stephen A. Smith today that he got a text. Look for Carl Anthony Towns to Portland. Right now in Minnesota, that team is a dumpster fire. We're talking about defense. Carl Anthony Towns is an even worse defender.
Yeah, there's no defense being played if you're getting Carl Anthony Towns. That's the thing. That's not the problem. It's not offense. It's defense. So it's no point.
I'm just telling you what the great Stephen A. Smith, that great insider that Stephen A. is. I don't know how many sources Stephen A. has, but that is just one of the many rumors we're going to get from Portland. And I think Portland has to be careful here, because I saw a little cryptic Instagram post by Damian Lillard today.
Yeah, that's just going to make it worse, honestly. Let's just go ahead and move forward. We can hit on the Clippers Mavs real quick before we change and hit on football, because hey, it's going to a game seven. We're recording this now. It was Friday night, early Saturday morning, midnight just hit for us and the Clippers. The road team has won every game. My mind is confused on who's going to win this series, because this never happened ever. I thought the Mavs could have got it done in game six, but they just didn't. Kawhi Leonard is playing phenomenal, shooting with 70% from the field, which is out of this world. I just don't know who's going to win game seven. Whoever wins this is going to – I don't know. I just don't know.
Sticking with the trend, road team, Mavs, they're going to get it done. Kawhi is undeniable, but his team – is deniable, you know, like Kim Possible, Ron Stoppable. He's Kim Possible. The rest of the team is very much Ron Stoppable. So we'll see the battle between Kawhi and Luka Doncic. Who's going to have the better night? I think that's who determines who wins this series.
Yeah, Luka had an off night at 29. I'm thinking at least 40 in the game, in a game seven. He didn't have a good fourth quarter form and looked a little injured. We've had that shoulder that we've been discussing. I don't know if he can get that better. Kristaps Porzingis, another bad night from him. I've yet to see a good night from Kristaps Porzingis in a long time. You need something better from him in game seven.
Yeah, Reggie Jackson having another 22-point night. I think the Clippers will get it done. If not, it's over for him. Let's just go ahead and move forward, because we can talk about that, because that game is on Sunday. We can just have another show bringing about Indeed. That. But let's go ahead and hit on football, because Patton Cook, his team, the Titans, they're trying to get Julio Jones, as Julio Jones wants out, and there's a lot of teams trying to get old Julio. And we all heard a second-round pick and a little bit extra compensation will get Julio Jones. Patton, why hasn't this trade been done, as Gabe is just going to grab his Patriots jersey?
Because he ain't going to the Titans, bro.
Well, the main reason is, and something we were talking about off-air, Atlanta's holding out for that first-round pick, and no team right now is really offering that, and that's why Atlanta hasn't kind of bitten the hand off of any team right now. What most teams are offering is a second round pick and something else, and the Titans are one of those teams. And for a team right now, I'm just going to talk kind of play style. We can talk compensation stuff till we're blue in the face, but for Tennessee right now, they need Julio Jones. You're missing a ton of playmakers, which is going to be hurting AJ Brown's production, because right now AJ is looking at a ton of double teams in 2021. If the Titans don't get someone, we lost Jonnu Smith, our number one tight end. We lost Corey Davis, our number two wide receiver. We lost Adam Humphries, our number three wide receiver. We lost Cameron Batson, our number four wide receiver. It's just a nightmare. It's just a nightmare for the Tennessee offense. One thing, we do have something going for us. The offensive line looks to be revamped, but at the skill position, it's all downhill. And if you don't get Julio Jones, you're not going to have another breakout season from A.J. Brown, because A.J. Brown is going to be seeing a lot of double and triple coverage, because who else are you scared of at this wide receiver position of the Tennessee Titans? I do think this is going to get done. A lot of reports right now, the experts, if you will, in the NFL world say this is going to get done. I need it to get done for my own mental health. If it doesn't, there's going to be some sad games of me sitting in the Nissan Stadium level 334. I need it to get done.
Yeah, I think that from the reports that I've seen, the Titans and the Patriots are the closest suitors to getting Julio. And I think that the Titans are the most desperate. So y'all might end up with Julio Jones, which that's good, I guess. I mean, it will work out. If y'all are the most desperate, that means y'all have to give up the most. But he comes to the Patriots, Julio wants to come to the Patriots. He should want to, at least. We going to ball out, son.
You guys are going to have a whole argument here, guys.
Let me say this one final thing. Atlanta is not going to trade to the New England Patriots only for what you did to them, Gabe. I think I've sit pretty easy at night knowing that. One final thing, and I'll let Marcus, you take us out of here. The Titans' first-round pick history isn't great, so what's the harm? What's the harm in giving up this first-round pick?
I'm glad you said that, because I was just going to say the first-round picks for the Titans have been terrible. The most games that's been played as a first-round pick was what, Mariota? Honestly.
And he's gone.
For the Titans, you might as well give up that first-round pick, because all your best players have really been either free agents or later on in the draft. Julio Jones is an exceptional receiver. Don't get it twisted. I think anybody with Julio Jones will be exceptionally well. It's just who's willing to give up their most for him. And looks like the most desperate is the Titans right now, because they don't have who. If anybody could name the Titans receivers 2 through 5 right now, hey, you have a true loyal fan. Just plain and simple.
I would name them off, but I don't want to. I don't want to bore the listeners, but we do have Josh Reynolds, the LA Rams receiver that came over. Kalijah Lipscomb, we got off the practice squad of another team. It's a bunch of no names. The Titans needed to get it done. John Robinson, your head's on the chopping block, buddy, if you don't get this one done, because we had the cap space to get Corey Davis. We didn't want it. So I'm hoping a plan is up the sleeve of Mr. J-Rob. If not, oh dear.
Yeah, good luck for the let's go Colts. That's all I'm gonna say. Just a toy with Patton. But that's all that we have here on today. Thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of the JTS podcast. We are out of here.
Peace.